Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. This is our fourth and final oral argument of the morning. Matthew Prescott Beal versus State of Minnesota, 8220343. And it's nice to see you both here in person. We have different options for where you might want to stand this morning to present your arguments. The lectern in the middle of the room will display the time if you're interested in seeing the time counted down for you. Appellant will have 15 minutes, respondent will have 15 minutes, and then appellant will have 5 minutes to present any rebuttal. Before you begin your argument, please identify yourself and the party you represent. And that ends my remarks. When you're ready to go, you may proceed.
Thank you.
Yes.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Joshua London. I'm here on behalf of Appellant Matthew Beal. And a little nervous because I haven't been here in a while. So, all right. May it please the court. Your Honors, the defense of self-defense does not and absolutely should not require the defendant to commit a crime or have the intent to harm. Despite this case representing an archetypal example of self-defense, the district court denied appellant a self-defense instruction to which he was entitled based on a non-binding case which frankly misinterpreted the justified use of force law. Holding that the district court was justified in denying the self-defense instruction was an abuse of discretion by the post-conviction court for four reasons. First, the basis for the denial was State versus Savino, a case that's not published and not binding.
Would you agree, before you get to number two, I know it's annoying to have your 4 points interrupted, but while we're discussing Savino, would you agree your case is factually very similar to the Savino case?
In most ways, I would say yes.
And would we have to, in order to rule for you, disagree with the majority in Savino?
I think there is a path to finding that Mr. Beal met his burden of production and distinguishing the case from Savino by distinguishing what a shove is from holding somebody. I do think those are very different acts because there is case law identifying a push as an assault harm, meeting both the mens rea and actus rea elements. And if the court would prefer I dig into that right off the bat, I'd be happy to, or I can hit it in stride when I get
to that. I will leave that to your judgment.
Okay. Just for the sake of being able to unravel this as in the order that makes sense, not hopping around, I think I'll do that, if that's okay. Number two would be that State versus Savino simply misapplied the justified use of force law. Number three is that even were Savino decided correctly, Mr. Beal met his burden of production, entitling him to a self-defense instruction. And lastly, this case, as I stated, is distinguishable from Savino in the actions taken by the appellant. So first, the Savino case is non-binding and unpublished. Unpublished cases, as you know, do not hold precedential value and may be considered persuasive. Ultimately, what that means here is that the Savino case is not law, and the primary question is not whether the post-conviction court interpreted Savino correctly. Instead, the question is whether the lower courts interpreted the justified use of force statute correctly. Here, they did not. The lower courts added an element to the self-defense statute. Unlike the lower courts here in Savino, though, the self-defense law in Minnesota does not require the commission of a crime or intent to harm. Number two, Savino case is wrong. Self-defense does not require an admission of guilt to a crime, and it does not require the intent to cause harm. The statute contemplates justifiable use of force, not commission of a crime.
Mr. Lundgren spends some time in his brief discussing the absence of an actus reus and how an actus reus is, you know, required in order to meet the burden that a defendant bears to get the instruction. Do you agree that there was no actus reus here?
I do not agree with that, Your Honor.
And what was the actus reus?
While the state admits in its brief that the appellant here did have mens rea, and it makes the contention that there was no actus rea, the case State versus Dorn, which is relied on very heavily by the state in its brief, identifies force means is satisfied even by the slightest offensive touching. In the Dorn case, the individual there shoved a person twice because the person was in her face and claimed that she wanted to get that person out of her personal space. And in that case, the Supreme Court decided that the evidence is sufficient to establish that Dorn possessed the mens rea for assault harm, and goes on to say, Dorn did, however, intentionally apply force to another person, which satisfies, oh, I'm sorry, that's on the mens rea actus. Previously in the case, I apologize, the Dorn court said both of these actions, referring to the pushes, inflicted harm because they imposed something unpleasant, a blow. It's the exact same conduct that Mr. Beal admitted to in this case. And as such, the court went on, Dorn's conduct satisfied the actus reus element of assault harm. And it is the exact same actus reus here. The action was intentional, the action was a push, the action in Dorn was the identical action, and it was found to meet both the mens rea and actus rea elements of assault harm.
So I just want to make sure, because I've been looking at the Dorn case too, that we've got the push, that we're talking about the same thing. So here, looking at your client's testimony, was it a push, an open-handed push, which involved SA's neck, that lasted about 5 to 6 seconds and pushed SA into the next room? I mean, is that's really what we're talking about here, right?
That's the testimony, and that is what my client admitted to on the stand, that he used open hands, that the push was to get her out of the way and to prevent her from hitting him again, his wife, I should say.
So looking at Dorn, is the question for us then, does that describe a battery, right? I mean, that's the question. Because if it does, then he should gotten the self-defense instruction. I just want to make sure I'm following what you're saying.
I think Your Honor is exactly right that in Dorn, which very clearly restates previous decisions, that battery has been incorporated into the assault harm statute, that the actions of Dorn in that case did constitute battery and therefore met both elements of the intent harm. And therefore, in this case, with the identical actions, both elements are met. Does that answer your question?
Yes, I'm a little troubled because, I mean, I think part of what you're saying is, look, the district court added an additional element. They got the law wrong. And the post-conviction court did, too. So then this court should make the decision looking at all the facts about whether or not your client met his burden of production, entitling him to the self-defense instruction, mm-hmm. which I think is what you're asking. But we're doing that on a record that we don't even have the complete record. We only have a transcript of, one argument on the self-defense instruction and your client's testimony. So, and yet you're asking us to make that decision. And that troubles me a little bit. Can you help me with that?
Well, I will try to help, Your Honor. I believe that we did submit the transcripts, so the entire case is available to the court. The transcripts were part of the submission.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe I just missed part of it.
There were two parts to the transcript, and both were submitted, so I want to make sure the court has both portions of the transcript. In the transcript, the most relevant portion is Mr. Beal's testimony, because that is where he makes his production of elements to satisfy the self-defense requirements. So even though the transcripts are all available, I think the relevant part is what's provided in the briefs, that he admitted shoving with the open hands, and then, of course, comparing that to the actions in Dorn, they're indistinguishable in any reasonable way. And if Dorn is a Supreme Court precedential case and it says that that meets both elements, then Mr. Beal's actions certainly meet those elements as well. I mentioned the use of force versus commission of a crime in the statute, that the statute refers to use of force. I'm not going to go on with that too far based on timing, but it's very simple to see that the word force is included in the statute. Nowhere does it say that a person has to have a certain intent, that they have to cause harm, or that they have to meet the elements of the crime to which they're charged in order to say that they use force. Force is defined as power, violence, or pressure directed against a person or thing, which is almost the same definition as of a push. Additionally, more concerning here is that, or equally concerning here, is that affirming Savino would have unreasonable and unsensible impacts on future cases where people use force to protect themselves. And in Savino, Judge Ross's dissent is very direct on this point, and he gives a great example. He says it sets up a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. For example, a person reacting to an onrusher rushing towards him and his children. This father throws an elbow at the person to avoid harm to him and his children. And upon testifying, he said, "I just wanted to protect myself and my kids. In fact, I'm sorry that he broke his jaw, or I'm sorry that I hit him." Under the Savino majority opinion, that person would not be entitled to a self-defense instruction.
Do you see a distinction between a situation like in Savino or here and the Pishol case? I'm not sure how it's pronounced, which is kind of similar, but I would suggest that in that case we're dealing with an accident as opposed to a more intentional act. Do you think there's a distinction between the two types of circumstances?
I think that's a very important distinction. The case relied upon by the appellee I believe it's State versus Pishol, I think that's what it's called, represents a case where an individual claims that he reached out his hand to grab somebody on the shoulder and accidentally struck the person in the face because of their movements. That means that the actual act of making non-consensual contact itself was an accident. They're not admitting to committing any type of even the lightest offensive touching.
So in Pishol, we have the act, an actus reus, but not the mens rea.
Correct.
And so how is the mens rea here different than in the circumstances in the Pishol case?
Well, Your Honor, in this case, Mr. Beal intended the push. Just like any person in a self-defense situation, he intended to respond and protect himself, and he needed to do so using physical force. That is a much different mindset to protect yourself using physical force than to accidentally make contact with somebody when you're moving your hand. Mr. Beal never testified that contact was accidental. He testified it lasted for several seconds. He testified that he intentionally pushed her. The only thing he testified to about his mindset that was an issue for the court was that he didn't intend to cause harm.
And what about the Fleck case? How do we fit that case into all of this? Because Fleck talks about the act and the intent requirement and says that for assault harm, you just need a general intent to, do the act.
Right. In Fleck, the court concluded that assault harm only requires general intent, which is understood. And I agree with the court that general intent crime only requires proof of intention to do the physical act, which here my client testified he intended to push her. Again, the distinction and the comparison with Fleck is Fleck directly applies to what my client said. He intentionally committed the act of pushing, which the court in Fleck said, as long as the defendant did the act on their own volition and free will, then and knew it doesn't matter if the person knew that it would cause harm or violate the law. So that's directly in keeping with my argument here that Mr. Beal only had to intend the action, and that is a use of force that fits perfectly with the statute of self-defense. It does not require this additional mindset of I have to be the type of person who wants to harm somebody. In fact, I would argue that it's not what we want. In the state's brief, they argue that pushing could be seen as the minimal use of force. But isn't that what we want people to use when faced with an offense against their person? We don't want, as a policy, to require people to intend harm. In fact, we don't want anyone to ever intend harm. What we want is that minimal use of force. Mr. Beal could have taken additional action, but he took the minimal reasonable force to get out of the situation and protect himself. And if the issue is actus reus, he admitted committing the push. The state agrees that the mens rea element was met in their brief, and that's in keeping with the case law that we've already discussed. I'm out of time.
All right, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Kyle Lundgren. I'm an assistant St. Paul City Attorney. I'm here on behalf of the state. And I would echo what Mr. London said for both of us. It's been 4 or 5 years since we were here. I apologize for any nerves or...
It's been a long time since we were here, too. And in fact, I mean, if we're being honest, this is my first time in Courtroom 100, so...
Well, Your Honor, where I'd like to start with this is an old saying, you can't have your cake and eat it too. It's factually inconsistent. Once you eat a cake, it's gone. Likewise, self-defense and being innocent of assault are factually inconsistent. If a defendant's testimony is inconsistent with a theory of self-defense, the law says they cannot have that self-defense instruction. They've eaten their cake. They can't have it back. Both the trial court and the post-conviction court looked at this record, what we have here, and correctly concluded that the appellant had not met his burden of production in this case and was not entitled to a self-defense instruction. The respondent is asking the court to uphold those rulings. Rather than belabor the brief which we submitted, I would like to specifically address two what I believe are important points for the court. The first being that while on first glance this might appear to be simply revisiting the Savino decision, that's not entirely accurate. 4 years after Savino, the Supreme Court issued the Dorn decision, and that impacted what was going on in terms of self-defense. Self-defense is available in non-assault charges, so when the appellant argued in their brief that the definition of self-defense doesn't necessarily require an assault, he's correct, but it does require some sort of factual basis to the underlying offense. It's a justification defense. I did it, but. I committed a crime, but I did no wrong. The crime which the defendant claims to have committed to get that self-defense instruction is an assault. Dorn described assault as having both a mens rea requirement and an actus reus requirement, which refers to an act which comprises a battery. And the defendants in Dorn, in Savino, and in the appellant's case all had the mens rea, and mens rea is not at issue here. They had general intent for the act in question. But appellant does not meet the requirement for actus reus because on this record, he did not commit a battery.
And what about the push? How is the push not the actus reus?
That's where I'm going next, Your Honor.
Perfect.
A battery is described in Dorn as to lay a blow or cause something damaging or painful to be endured, and I would respectfully submit that this record does not reflect that. Not all pushes are created equal. To conclude otherwise would result in what I would submit is an absurd result where any use of force would become a battery.
I'm having a hard time distinguishing between what happened here as I read the record, and that would be kind of this open-handed push somehow involving her neck that lasted 5 or 6 seconds into the next room.
I mean, 3 to 5 seconds.
Three to five seconds. I thought he testified it was 5 to 6 seconds.
I would defer to the record.
Okay. Well, whatever the record says, it lasted several seconds. How is that different from Dorn, where it's talking about, I believe it was pushed him in the chest with two hands hard enough to cause him to lose his balance? I mean, here we're talking about pushing someone in the next room, pushing someone enough to lose their balance. And I would say when I looked at the Dorn case, I talked about it was inflicted harm. I noticed the part where it said these actions inflicted harm because she imposed something unpleasant, a blow. How's that? So I'm having a hard time distinguishing between Dorn factually and this. Help me with that.
And the distinction between Dorn and what we have here, Your Honor, is there is more information provided in Dorn. In Dorn, if that was an actual self-defense claim, that person would have done a much, much better version of establishing a battery rather than just providing some use of force.
The defendant,
yes. I'm using Dorn as a comparison. Dorn was not a self-defense case.
So is it your argument then that for an assault that there has to be some bodily injury of some sort, or just an offense of like a touch alone, if it's unwanted, is an assault?
Yes. Your Honor, what I would submit that Dorn is establishing as it describes what comprises a battery is it's not just some use of force. It's not just a push, because a push could be any number of things. A push, if it could be something as relatively light as someone trying to go through a crowd, or it could be something as what we see in Dorn. And the factual record in Dorn was much more established in terms of its violence. It specifically described it as a blow. It was obviously something damaging or painful to be endured. That was the language in the Dorn decision. That's not what we have here. And it should be noted that appellant did have a burden of production. It's not sufficient to just allege a push, a use of force. The only additional information we have here, because we don't have the rest of the record, is a 3 to 5 second push. Was it a hard push? Was it a shove? Was it a blow? We don't have that information on this record. And I would submit that given the trial court was closer to the facts on this case, it was in a better position to evaluate what sort of force was going on and whether it amounted to a battery.
But if there was a push to push someone into the next room, can't we infer to that it was not just some gentle push?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. It could be just pushing past to get into the next room.
Well, let me ask this. Would a push of that nature be sufficient to constitute the offense of domestic assault or fifth degree assault?
Not necessarily, Your Honor, because if it was simply a light push to get past someone, I would submit that is not sufficient to become a battery and reach the actus reus for an assault. But we simply don't know here because we don't have enough facts, and I would submit that because of that, the appellant did not reach their burden of production. One of the other things that came up in both the briefs and during the other...
Can I just go back? There's something that's bothering me, and forgive me if I don't articulate it very well, but is the argument that a defendant has a burden to basically prove up an assault in order to get a self-defense instruction? I mean, is that really what the defendant's burden of production encompasses?
Well, a justification defense, as I noted in the brief, Your Honor, does require at least a factual basis of some sort. They don't have to concede to the state's case by any means, but it's a justification defense is, I did it, however, you know, be it for, you know, there's other justification defenses.
Okay, so I did it. Let's focus on the it. Is it the defendant's obligation to establish the it, or is it the defendant's burden to establish the justification related circumstances?
Well, as a preliminary matter, it's not their requirement to establish the it, because otherwise it would have been directed out after.
I think that's my problem. I feel like in order to fully embrace your argument, we would somehow be implicating the burden of proof, the state's burden of proving the act itself.
Your Honor, there's no requirement that a defendant assert a justification defense, but they do have a burden of production, and that burden of production goes back in case law a very long time. So it's not implicating their right, you know, to remain silent, or they don't have to prove themselves guilty, if that's what you're asking. But they have to admit to some sort of facts that amount to an assault to avail themselves of a justification defense. They can't have their cake and eat it too. It has to be one or the other. It's the simple nature of a justification defense. With my remaining time, I wanted to contrast the facts in the appellant's case to some of the other case law which we had in the briefs. Specifically, I wanted to compare it to the dissent example in Savino. Savino, as I noted, happened before Dorn. Savino has no discussion of battery at all. It does have some of actus reus, but that's almost entirely in the dissent. Unfortunately, the majority decision in Savino did not address the dissent's arguments, which would have made this a lot easier, honestly. But the dissent example in Savino is someone who throws an elbow at a charging attacker, felling them. That's a situation where there's obviously actus reus, because as described by the dissent, this is someone who throws a hard elbow at a charging attacker, felling them. I would respectfully submit that would meet the requirement of a burden of production of establishing a battery.
Because they were felled or because of the hard elbow?
Both, Your Honor. Likewise, the Dorn case, pushing another person backwards with a hard blow into a fire, I would submit that establishes a battery. But some of the other cases, the Pashol case, in that case, that defendant forcefully reached out intending to grab another person. As I think was discussed earlier, there's not only no mens rea there in that particular case because it was an accident justification, but if that was being evaluated for self-defense, there's also no actus reus there, because simply reaching out to grab someone, at least on those facts, without any more elaboration, is not enough to establish a battery.
But under Fleck, where the Supreme Court said all you need is general intent to, you know, commit the act to lift your arm, wouldn't the actus reus be there and the mens rea as well?
Your Honor, I would submit that at least under Dorn, it would be there. And if my recollection is correct, Dorn is several years older than Fleck. Fleck seemed to concentrate more on mens rea rather than the actus reus as a whole. And then to compare to a couple of the other examples in case law, the defendant in Savino, as I mentioned in the brief, there is a little more involved there, a little more factual background there than simply lifting someone. It was lifting someone, carrying or moving them to the door, and then physically dropping them. And yet, I would submit that is not a battery, even on those facts, and that seemed to be where the court was going with that, even though that case predates the Dorn decision. And then,
why is that not a battery? Because it was accidental? Is that the thought? Or what's the rationale there when you drop somebody?
What I would submit, Your Honor, is similar to what I'm arguing for this appellant, is that not all drops are created equal. That doesn't necessarily have to be a battery. It could be. A push could be. But someone who is seeking to avail themselves of a self-defense argument has a burden of production. They don't have to avail themselves of that argument, but if they do, they have that burden of production, and so they have to provide facts sufficient to establish a battery.
So in this case, what would have, and I don't want you to argue against your own side of the case, but what would have qualified in your mind?
Facts more similar to the Dorn case, Your Honor. A hard push categorized as a blow, described as a blow. That's simply not what we have here. I can't speak to whether the remainder of the record in this case contained anything else qualifying that. I wasn't the trial counsel. But at least on the record, which the court has here, I would submit there's not enough there to establish a battery.
So he minimized it too much, his conduct, in essence. I mean, I'm in trying to understand it. I mean, he admitted he touched her, pushed her, but he was minimizing it to the point where you're saying it's not really an assault.
And in doing so, locked himself into an argument where he was simply stuck saying he didn't do it.
So, if I may.
Yes, please.
This gets back to one of my original questions of counsel for appellant, which is, I mean, you've agreed, and it says in Dorn, you know, a push may, not always, right, you know, constitute battery, even if, right? So a push may. And you're saying, well, but here it might have been a light push. We don't know. We need to defer to the district judge on that. But here the district judge made this decision based upon what an intent requirement that is perhaps at odds with Dorn. So what do we do on appeal from that? So it's like one thing if the district judge had said, okay, I've heard all the testimony and, you know, so far, and that was a light push or that just wasn't enough to constitute a battery or, you know, something like that. That's one thing, but that's not what the record we have. Help me with that.
I concur, Your Honor, that the trial judge didn't seem to be spending much time on actus reus. He was far more spending more time on Savino as a whole. The post-conviction court did at least spend some time on actus reus. I guess my summary response to that question would be correct result, not necessarily the right path. I see my time has expired, so thank you.
Thank you very much for your argument. And you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Your Honors, thank you for the rebuttal time. It's a bit perplexing because the post-conviction court and the district court did focus on mens rea. It was that intent to harm that was the basis for this decision. Dorn very clearly deals with mens rea in this case and is clearly applicable, and the state even concedes that mens rea was met here. So the issue is, I guess, whether the push is a push or a drop is a drop, or all acts are created equal. But ultimately here, it doesn't matter if all pushes are created equal. This one is arguably worse in some ways than the one in Dorn. He pushes her for several seconds. He gets her from his wife all the way from one room into another. That is, at the very least, comparable to what's said in Dorn, and if not worse, because it lasts several seconds. In fact,
but without a fire.
Without a fire, that's yeah. True. I don't think there was any testimony in Dorn, according to the record, that says that there was any that the fire had anything to do with the push. It just happened to be there, and so in this case, not only did he push her for several seconds, did he admit to pushing her from one room into another, but he also admitted that his hands went up to her neck during the push. So there are several descriptive. He did describe his actions here, Mr. Beal. He said, I shoved her one room to another. It lasted 3 to 5 seconds and went up to her next. So the claim that there just isn't enough information to meet a burden of production here, I believe it falls flat because there was a description here. The only issue that the court found issue with was whether he had an intent to harm, which shouldn't have been the grounds to...
Can I ask you a quick question here? So I believe the record that we do have reflects, I mean, I think it was through his testimony, but you'll know better than I do, that after this push into this next room, at some point she calls the police, right? That is in the record.
After he pushes her, he testified that she hit him several times in the face. Right. I cannot recall who called the police there.
I think the record shows she did.
That would make sense.
I mean, is that something that we can consider in evaluating this, you know, how much this push bothered her?
I mean, well, I think if we can consider the fire, if we can consider whether somebody tripped and fell, then we can consider the consequences that occurred after the fact. Mr. Beal's wife claimed to be injured. Mr. Beal's wife claimed that she was assaulted, that she was bodily harmed. She called the police claiming that she had been assaulted. So if Mr. Beal's description is not sufficient, which I would argue it is, certainly the other facts in on the record that were put forward even by the state support that this was enough intent, enough of an actus reus, and enough of a mens reus. The claim here was that the defendant has a burden of production. Not that the defendant has to prove an assault. That was, according to the state, the wrong path to get there. And what else could a defendant produce except for describing his actions and shoving somebody, describing the duration with which it lasted, describing how he pushed, and describing where on the victim's body his hands went. That is a full production. The burden is to shift. The burden isn't that high of production that we need to also claim an intent to harm, or that we need to claim he needs to use the word blow as opposed to shove. Those are distinctions without meaning. What matters here is that the descriptive words used by Mr. Beal produced enough of a record that he acted in self-defense. And in closing, since I have very little time left, when somebody's hitting you and you state, "I pushed them to avoid being hit again," you are describing an archetypal example of self-defense. To claim that a person is not entitled, that a jury should not hear what the standard for self-defense when somebody commits that type of action, is to deny that somebody can act in self-defense without committing egregious harm on somebody or intentional harm on somebody, which is simply not supported in law. Thank you.
Thank you both for your arguments this morning. The case is well argued. It is now submitted to us, and we will issue our decision within the statutory time frame.
Thank you.
Thank you.